when we have to go in and get power, it's actually much more strategic. It's mental. We play mental games, and that's our superpower. It's all about strategy. So when you think about like some of the most powerful women in history, oftentimes they're powerful because they prioritize community, their influence, and a strategic mindset. So it's not necessarily about going in, trying to take all the resources and build the biggest engine. It's really about, okay, how do I actually sit back and use my mind to gain control of my life? That is femininity and that is power. And so that's actually what I exude in business.
Welcome to Old Money, a show dedicated to helping you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. Ladies who lunch, listen up. Life is not about looking rich. I want you to build a life and a legacy that feels rich in every sense of the word. If you're ready to stack cash, talk shop, and trade insider secrets, you're in the right place. These are the new rules to old money. So let's get after it. Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast for women building the trust funds they wish they were born with. I am your host, Amber Frankhuizen, and today you're in for a treat. I have a very special guest, my good friend, and I feel like this podcast episode is going to be our listeners being flies on the wall to when me and my girl sit down for cocktails and go off about the world and about money. But more so than her just being a friend and somebody I admire so much, our guest today is the CEO of Centure Financial, a premier financial strategist specializing in helping women-led brands scale and sustain their wealth. She is the girl I go to when I need a little bit of empowerment around money. She's the girl I go to when I'm trying to disable the patriarchy. Welcome our guest, Shay Bakani.
Hello, hello. I am so excited to be here. I feel like we always have money chats, chats about wealth. So this is so fitting. This is so on brand for me.
It's so on brand for both of us because I swear, whether it's your Instagram stories or when I actually get to spend time with you IRL, I always leave interacting with you hyped. I'm like, let's go. Let's take them down.
Yes. Honestly, when you said like, let's do this, I'm like, duh, I don't know a better fitting title than defeating the patriarchy. So this is like my life mission.
It's so great. Well, before we get into how we're going to disband, disable, destroy the patriarchy, and I say that so tongue in cheek, but like not really. Why don't you tell our guests a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, I am Shay Bakani. I am financial strategist. I own Centure Financial as well as a mother and a wife. So Centure Financial is a financial management firm that I own, and I started in 2019 after working in corporate accounting and finance. Lucky for me, I had a mentor. She was just the ultimate epitome of a girl boss. She was the CAO of the company that I was working for, so chief accounting officer. And immediately once I met her, she was gorgeous, feminine, bubbly personality. And I had never seen that in finance before. So I was very drawn to her. And I said, oh, okay, you, like, let's do a coffee chat. Like, I was just very young and eager. She was so welcoming and she was all for it. And she really kind of took me under her wing. She introduced me to other executives within the company, which allowed me to move around the company. And I really started to understand what this engine of corporate finance actually is. Because before, to my understanding, I'm like, we pay bills, payroll, like we keep, you know, the finances afloat. But it's so much more than that. When you think about corporate finance, it's really about sustainability. So making sure that the business is profitable. It's also about leverage. So how do you leverage credit? How do you leverage debt? How do you leverage the profit that you have? How do you leverage your investors and board of directors? And then of acquisitions. So we actually had an acquisitions department within the company that their sole job was to source companies, smaller companies, and be able to acquire them. So that way we can actually grow. So once I had this understanding of what corporate finance was, I realized there was such a disconnect from what it is versus what people think it is. So I had friends who had their own businesses, particularly like beauty agencies, and they were making multiple six figures, but I knew that they just didn't understand how to actually run a business from a financial perspective. So they would always come to me with questions and I was like, you know what? I'm going to start my own business. So that's exactly what happened in September 2019. I just did a cold email to someone that I knew that had their own business. And that is where Centure Financial was born.
I can't wait to dive into some of this. But one of the things that I admire so much about you, and it's something that you said drew you to your first mentor, was the femininity in business. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about women in business. We're talking about women securing capital, all of the things. Is that something, bringing the femininity to your business, something that you're conscious about doing?
Absolutely. Because before, when I had first started, I was like, I have to be masculine. I have to, you know, basically be this idea of what I thought finance was. But honestly, that's kind of what made me not want to get into it. I remember I worked in corporate finance for a very long time. And I didn't also mention this. So my dad also worked in finance. He worked in stocks since I was young. So it was never really very attractive. It just is what it is. You know, like, I'm just here to collect a paycheck. And I remember my mom was like, no, you need to take this seriously. Like, you're so good at this. And I'm like, uh-huh, yeah, whatever. And the reason why is because I feel like it didn't fit my personality. Here I am, like, I'm bubbly. I love fashion. I love beauty. Like, I love all the things. And so I didn't ever really see myself until I saw that woman who came into the company. She was a CAO. And I was like, wait a minute, you can be feminine and you can be bubbly and just be yourself, but also to get the job done. So I remember seeing that and it completely rewired my brain. And so being feminine and being myself is like something is at the core of what I do, because I also want to attract women who value beauty and aesthetics, because that's what we're all about. I just don't want to do this and it's boring and I have to be overtly masculine just to be able to make money.
I think that's so well put. And one of the things that I admire so much about you is that you balance it so well, because you're also all business. There's no fluff here. Like, this femininity, I think, in business, it gets sometimes a bad rap, right? Of people thinking that it's like, follow your emotions and what am I called to do today? No, that's not how you run your business. That's not how I run my business. It's very strategic. It's very professional, yet it's true to us.
Oh my God, yes. Femininity, I feel like people think it's pink, it's dainty, it's passive and all those things. But I would argue that you sometimes need more femininity in business, because femininity is also nurturing. So you have to nurture your money, you have to nurture employees. It's all about community. How else do you build a powerful team? It's through community. But more importantly, you mentioned it, strategy. Okay, so I actually have a theory on this and we can talk about it more when we kind of get into like the topic of power. But I'm obsessed with the topic of power, and it seems like odd. And I remember I used to kind of hide it to myself until I got older. And I was like, actually, no, if you don't want to talk about it, you're weird to me, because power completely governs our lives. And it's not like in a dictatorship way, but it's understanding what's going on in our life, because power is simply control. Someone's controlling everything that's going on. And so to understand it, you have to understand power. So there is a masculine way of power, which is all about brute force. It's all about control. It's all about controlling resources. It's very physical, right? Oftentimes when men get power, it's through military. They're being very physical. They're actually going in and taking resources. Women, when we have to go in and get power, it's actually much more strategic. It's mental. We play mental games, and that's our superpower. It's all about strategy. So when you think about like some of the most powerful women in history, oftentimes they're powerful because they prioritize community, their influence, and a strategic mindset. So it's not necessarily about going in trying to take all the resources and build the biggest engine. It's really about, okay, how do I actually sit back and use my mind to gain control of my life? That is femininity and that is power. And so that's actually what I exude in business.
I'm obsessed. Okay, now you guys that are listening are hearing how our coffee dates and our cocktail dates go. It's like, I have a theory about this. And I'm like, yes, sister, give it to me. Like, we have to go back and talk about power. But one of the things I want to say to that, to anybody who is listening, who isn't a business owner, one of the things that I really encourage women to do, and I'm sure you would agree with this, Shay, and why I want somebody who's not a business owner or not yet a business owner to still tap into this episode, is because you have to, whether you run a business or not, run your life like a business and take control and power. And I'd love to know your take on how you see women. I mean, you said from the top, running a business from a financial perspective is how to run a successful business. What does that mean? How do you see women giving away their power in that regard? And how do you step in to help them?
Okay, first, let's talk about how they give their power away. I've met so many women where we'll kind of talk about investing and like, what are you doing investment wise? And they'll say like, oh, I don't know, like my financial advisor does this and I have no clue what's going on. My husband does this and I have no clue what's going on. And I kid you not, this is happening in 2025. And I'm like, are you okay? Have we not heard enough stories?
Right.
I don't know if everyone remembers when Rihanna was like scammed by her accountant. And then there's also so many stories that don't make it to light, but like Ponzi schemes and Bernie Madoff. How many times do people have to scam women for you to get the point? If you don't know what you're investing in, if you can't understand that financial statement, don't fucking do it. It's just not worth it. I met a woman recently and she was like, yeah, but I just like, you know, my financial accountant, he's been in the family for years and I just, whatever he puts the money in. And I'm like, oh my God, are you okay? First of all, mind you, it's her dad's financial advisor. So I'm like, your dad hasn't even died, unfortunately. I mean, well, fortunately. So that means the point is, you don't really know if your dad is going to get the money. Your dad has been saving for retirement, meaning all this investing he's been doing hasn't even been proven yet, was my point. And so I'm like, how are these people so trusting with your money? That's just pure insanity. And so I even think about, I don't know if you ever saw like the Bernie Madoff documentary.
Yes.
So for those of you guys that don't know, he ran the biggest Ponzi scheme in Wall Street like to date. And basically what he was doing was taking people's money, convincing them that he was investing it in the stock market. In reality, he actually wasn't doing any of that. It was like a multi-billion dollar Ponzi scheme that he ran for 30 years where, you know, major organizations and banks were even involved. So I'm like, how do people not look at these stories and realize that it can happen to you on a smaller scale? If he was doing this to Goldman Sachs and Chase, do you think that you are exempt? So I think the most important thing in how you give away your power is just giving it all to someone else and trusting them and say, you got this, good luck. You should be able to look at that financial statement, that balance sheet, and read it and go, this makes sense or this doesn't make sense. Because what Bernie Madoff was doing was he was sending fake statements. And it was only one person who said, that doesn't make sense. The statement actually has a date at the bottom, has numbers you can call. This is fake. And there was only one person that actually did that because it was one person paying attention. And it's really that simple. So I think that if you are going to invest or even just be empowered with your money and manage your money, you have to know where it's going and you have to know all the ins and outs, even if you have a financial advisor. So that's going to be first, how to stop giving away your power. The second thing is only invest in what you know. I am not going to go out here and tell you to invest in stocks or invest in crypto if you have no knowledge of that. So for you, for example, like if you have a marketing business and you're like, I know marketing, I can look at a marketing P&L and balance sheet and my sleep and know what makes sense. Okay, then go invest in other marketing companies, go invest in startups because you can actually read and look at that business and see what makes sense. Only invest in what you know.
It's such a good point. If I wanted to acquire a company that was a product-based company, I don't know anything about product and landed costs and freight and how much it takes to ship a container from China. I have no idea. Yeah. I can't add value there at all. That's such good advice. And I think that's also great for people in or out of business, right? Do what you know and learn more about everything I say to be dangerous and everything. Like you said, you can spot a fake, know what's going on. But when you double down on what you're good at, that's where I feel like women really do well in creating wealth for themselves. So I want to talk a little bit more about that. You are really big and a really big advocate for helping women secure capital for their businesses. You help them do that. Can you explain to our audience what that means?
So whenever you are at a point in your business, whether you are a startup or whether you've been doing it for years, you need capital to be able to continue to grow. So if you try to use your own capital, you'll notice very quickly that cash flow is low and that you always have a cap. So let's say you have $1 million business and you're like, you know what, I'm going to use this. I'm going to bootstrap to be able to get myself to 10 million. The reason that's almost nearly impossible is because you're going to have to drain all of your own financial resources in order to scale. So what I learned by working in corporate finance is actually none of those companies do that. There's actually not one Fortune 500 company, I would even say Fortune 1000 company that exists that has not raised capital. And the reason is because you're able to go 10 times further when you are able to raise capital. You can kind of think of it like a mortgage. So if we were all told, we live in California, if we were all told, hey, go buy your own home with nothing but cash, majority of people wouldn't own their homes. But because we're able to leverage the bank's money, we're all able to just put down like 20% or whatever the case may be and actually get a home. So that's kind of what it is in business, where it's like you're able to use the bank's money or investors' money as leverage to be able to scale in 10x what you're doing. So one of the reasons that you would need to raise capital is if you want to expand the team, if you have a product-based business, inventory. Inventory is a very costly business because you're constantly investing in product. You constantly have to invest in product 3 months in advance. So most of the time it's like in free and you don't even have anything to sell. So you're going to always need capital. If you have a tech business, you need to invest in the infrastructure. So really, you just need to be able to have the money in order to grow and to scale. I don't recommend taking on capital just for the sake of it and you don't actually have a plan of what you're going to do with the money. Oftentimes, people won't even give you the money if you can't actually verbally communicate where exactly every penny is going to go. And so I think it's really important for women to normalize it because we look at it as like, oh my God, no, that's debt. There's nothing scary about debt. America is built on debt. Private equity is built on debt. Like America wouldn't be the engine that it is without debt. So there's nothing scary about it. I'm just against consumer debt. So, you know, credit card debt with 22% interest rates, which I feel like a lot of female founders do. They're like, well, I've built my business on my credit card. That is not a flex. You have a 22% interest rate. You don't have any real perk or benefit versus when you raise capital, you get a loan of credit or you get an angel investor. The interest rate is significantly lower. The payment terms are much more flexible. You don't have to worry about paying it every single month. So I think there's a way to go about it and there's a way to be strategic, but I think we first have to normalize the conversation that it's not bad to raise capital.
100%. I'm so glad you clarified because that's what I was going to ask. We talk a lot about good debt versus bad debt. And I agree with you, consumer debt, putting it on a credit card. The other thing that women need to remember in business is that typically you're not just getting, like you said, money from an angel investor. If you work with a good investor, you get what's called greener money, mentorship, connections, support. Why though, Shay, are women only receiving 2% of venture capital compared to men? What's your take? What's going on?
So this is a huge problem. So we're actually raising capital for a tech company and we're going the venture capital route, which I hate, because the issue is that most venture capital firms are ran by men, they're owned by men, and they just don't get it. That is just the reality, where if you go in pitching a great idea, they're not the consumer. So they just simply don't understand why this is actually necessary. So for instance, I was working with this company, they're based in Canada, and they have, it's basically like underwear that's like a pad. And they were saying, you know, I've pitched investors before and it didn't really go well. I'm like, yeah, because they have never had anything come out of their vagina. So they don't understand why you just can't go into Walgreens and get the pads that are already there. They don't know what the convenience is of the technology that we have. And so it's like, I think the most of the problem is that when we present these ideas, for the most part, most of our consumers are women. So the problems that we're solving are for women and they just don't get it. So what I would argue, if you are pitching to venture capital, like, you know, have your wife come sit in on this. Okay. And if your wife says no, then you can walk away. But I think we need to start doing that. And we also just need more female-led venture capital firms, which we don't have. That's most of the problem too, is that most of these VCs, even when you're walking into a room, they're all men. So it's very hard to be able to communicate a problem that they just don't see.
Yeah. What is your take as well on women versus men with like risk tolerance or asking for money? Do you see resistance in that area as well?
Yes. Actually, I try to coach my clients on this. I had a client where we were getting ready to pitch. And so we're like coaching. I'm like, okay, make sure you say this, make sure you don't say that. I was noticing one of her benchmarks. So typically when you're pitching, what you're doing is you're benchmarking your company against another company. So let's say if you have a marketing agency, you're going to take the biggest marketing agency and kind of compare how you guys are the same. And so that's what she was doing. But I noticed her benchmarks were significantly lower. I was like, well, why are you doing that? Like basically she's performing lower than what the industry standard is. And she's like, well, I don't want them to think like I'm, you know, being dramatic or lying. I'm like, do you not realize we're asking for $1 million? You have to be dramatic. Every man that's going to walk into, you have to be dramatic. You're selling a vision. You're selling a dream. And you're trying to downplay the industry benchmark. And so now what they're going to look at is, well, you know, industry standard is 2%. You're saying 1%. Why would I want to invest in that? You're lower than the industry standard. Because she didn't want to come off as like she was lying or being dramatic. I'm like, we are pitching here. Okay. Any man that walks into that room, if the industry standard is 2%, he's going to say we're doing 3% because he wants to just go above and beyond. And so you have to think like that. And most women don't. So I think that's part of the problem too, is we don't ask for enough. We're not overly confident. And a lot of that is because we don't understand the structure of investing. And so I want to break that down really quick too. When you are investing and you're raising money, you're not asking for a favor. You're not like, please, sir, just give me some money. This is not what's going on here. This is an investment opportunity so they can put their money to work. The investor, their job is to take their money, put it to work, because they're going to lose it when it's just sitting in the bank. You are doing them a favor as well by saying, hey, if you take $1 million and you give it to me, I'm going to put it to work and give you $5 million back or $7 million back within this time frame. This is what they're investing in you for. And so when you understand that dynamic, you realize, okay, why am I desperate? Why am I the one like, please, please, please? No, it's like, hey, I'm doing you a favor. You can have your shit sitting in a bank and get 1.1, you know, percent interest, or you can put it here and actually get, you know, a 7x return or 10x return. So also understanding that dynamic helps a lot, but a lot of women don't. So they kind of go into these pitch meetings almost with desperate energy and people can feel it.
Amen. I want to double underline what you said. Going to seek investment is not asking a favor. You are providing a service for that person. That is such a mic drop moment, Shay. That is so good. I think one of the other things that, you know, you hit on here too is like saying how, and I usually don't think about the dynamics between men and women. Working in real estate development and construction, I've really navigated that in a way that feels authentic to me. So this is not a personal problem for me. I have great relationships with men and women, and it has worked out for me in that way. But when I do feel insecure, I often have to put myself in that position of, what would a man do in this situation? And the man would be bombastic, confident, overstating, not that I'm saying to overstate by any means, that could be fraud. But the point is, when we are going to ask for something, I feel like so many of us are looking for the values that we have been raised to be good girls, to be cooperative, and have all of these rules that are self-created constructs. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
No, this is actually one of my favorite topics because, okay, here's my theory. Okay.
Yes, give it.
So men get their kind of ego and they kind of get their sense of self from external accomplishments. So like the degree that they have, the job that they have, the type of wife that they have, you know, their kids, their family, like a lot of their self-identity comes from external accomplishments. And that's just kind of like their makeup, which is why we kind of talked about early when they seek out power by obtaining resources, like a huge business and trying to buy up everything. We see Bill Gates and all these multi-billionaires trying to just acquire so much. Why? Because they get their self-identity from, you know, having so many things. Women, on the other hand, we kind of get our our sense of self from internal things that you can't really quantify. So like how we feel on the inside, if we have guilt, if we have shame, if we're prideful, if we're inspired, you know, it's very things that you can't really, it's not really tangible. So you can't really measure it. And so I think this is a problem because you can find a woman who she's so successful. She has a degree. She's so good at business. She has tons of friends. And, you know, on the outside, her life is great, but she still doesn't have that sense of self because she's not measuring her sense of self properly. And so I think as women, I'm not saying you should kind of go out and say, okay, take a measurement of all the material possessions that you have and say, okay, this is my self-worth. But I think it's also just kind of getting extremely clear on how are you going to identify your self-worth? Because that's where your confidence comes from. That's where those big questions and those asks come from. And so I think we kind of have to make a shift a little bit, because I would even argue this is why we have so many men with inflated egos. Because it's like, wow, you built a big business, but you're a shitty person and you barely pay your employees, but you're still able to sleep at night. So I think it's really finding that balance of what it means to you and having that confidence, because oftentimes women don't have the confidence to make those big asks. They don't have the confidence to go for every single thing that they want because how they're measuring their value is so internal and it can't really be measured.
It's so important. And I wish I could remember the source from where I heard this analogy, but there was somebody talking probably on TikTok about how women tend to measure themselves against not being good enough, successful enough, fit enough, thin enough, whatever. I don't have enough. And the point about the measurement is like, what unit of measurement is enough? There is nothing to measure against. And so women never meet these benchmarks for themselves, which is what holds them back from taking that plunge, starting the business, starting to invest because they don't have enough. Well, who's to say what that is?
No, absolutely. Honestly, I've struggled with this too, but luckily your girl does therapy. And that was actually something that came up. Just like, you know how they tried to find out like what's that reoccurring loop? And we found that it was like, I kept saying stuff, well, I'm not doing enough. I don't have enough. I don't. And it's like, okay, you're going to always be in this revolving door of like lack of contentment because you're always like, I don't have enough. I don't have enough. But it's like, when you look back at your past self, you have surpassed like your wildest dreams, but yet you still feel like you're not doing enough and you don't have enough. So I think first it's coming to terms with what enough is. Like, you have to first say like, I'm enough right here, right now. I have everything that I need inside of me, all the resources that I need to kind of get to that next level. And of course, you always want to elevate and not be too content. But at the same time, you have to be okay with yourself and where you are. So I think it's that. But also, we have to look at the societal pressures. Men, their holds is such a low standard, a low bar, versus women. It's like, you got to look good. Mm-hmm. Family has to be on point. You have to work out. You have to exercise. It's like, it's really societal pressures that we kind of just take and internalize. And at some point you have to be like, fuck that. Because most of those pressures were put just to make money. You tell me my hair has to be a certain way. My body has to look a certain way. And 80% of the time, I actually have to go out and actually become a consumer and spend money just to emulate this made up expectation that you have. So you have to also kind of go within to say, okay, which one of these expectations are mine and which one are society? Because if it's society, you can throw it in the trash.
I'm obsessed with that. And I think this is a perfect segue to the thing that started this whole conversation between us, where I was like, oh my God, run to the podcast. We have to talk. It was a set of Instagram stories that you posted exploring this dynamic of women having children, wanting to have children, being in the workforce, and dealing with the costs of having children, daycare. Let's talk about it. What do you have to say?
So what's so bizarre is that we've had childcare since the beginning of time. There's always been some sort of childcare, even when women didn't work. But right now in particular, childcare costs are consuming about 20% or more of an entire household's income, which is pure insanity. It's never been like that in history. And so there's two reasons for that. One is that women are starting to out-earn men. So one out of every three wives actually make more than their husbands, which has never happened in history. And then also you have a scenario where so many women are starting to kind of leave the home much more. They have their businesses, they're traveling, they're making a significant amount of money. And I think what the patriarchy wants to do is level the playing field, because when you have childcare issues, regardless of who the breadwinner is, it always falls back on mom. Every single time. The husband is never going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to leave my job to go take care of the kids. I mean, of course you have those, but we're kind of just looking at it as more general.
Yeah.
And so I think the issue that's happening, I think it's intentional, honestly, because what happens is like now all these women, they left corporate, they start doing all these things, gig economy, like they started really making more and working for themselves. And now they want to pull the curtains back, because the moment that you have to pay significantly more in childcare, the question becomes, okay, is it honestly even worth it for me to work? I'm working just to pay childcare, which is exactly what's happening.
Yep.
Childcare is more than groceries and even rent in some counties. That is unheard of. And that makes absolutely no sense. And then, so the second problem is also private equity. private equity has entered the chat of childcare, and they've been buying up childcare centers, inflating the prices. They are starting to kind of like have a monopoly on so many necessary, essential things. And I think the government at some point has to step in and say, okay, we either put a cap on how much private equity owns in the market, or you subsidize childcare. I feel like any society that requires us to work 8 to 10 hour days, whether you have a business or whether you're in corporate, like for the most part, we're all required to work. If you look at the price of groceries, everyone has to work. You know, now we're in a place where most women can't even afford just to stay home because we all have to work. Okay, fine. If you have a society where we all have to work, then you also have to have a society where our kids have to be cared for. That just only makes sense. You required us to leave our home for 8 to 10 hours a day. Why are you not subsidizing childcare? So to me, also, it's like a systematic issue.
It totally is. And I actually just recorded an episode that was all about the new status symbols in today's world, right? And the old status symbol used to be the Betty Draper at home, having a wife who was there with the kids, and having the man that worked and supported the family was the status symbol. Well, that status symbol doesn't exist anymore. Number one, because it's not economically feasible. But number two, we have like the George Clooney's and the Amals, right? We have the Taylors and the Travis. We have the men that are looking for a higher value woman, but then the pressures that are on that super accomplished woman to run her career, go campaign at the UN, Amal, and then like raise two children. And, you know, at that level, we're talking about having a lot of household help, but for the everyday American, you don't have a staff of housekeepers, chefs, and nannies.
This is part of the problem. It's like unrealistic expectations. You want me to go out and work and also make a significant amount of money, but still be a mom, still manage my household, still plan things, still make it to the doctor's office. It's very unrealistic. And so for that, I would honestly just tell women that you have to kind of put that idea out of your mind. It's never going to happen. You're never going to be able to have it all at once if you're still doing the same thing that the structure wanted you to do 50 years ago. You're going to have to change things up. You're going to have to make more than enough to be able to hire help. And it doesn't have to like a live-in chef. It could be meal prep where you have enough just for meal prep, you know, Blue Apron. You have enough where you can at least put them in an after-school activity so you can continue working. I think right now is really about creating the life that you want. Yes. And it's not going to look the same for every single person because, you know, some people, my husband gets off at 5, my other one, he gets off at 4. Okay, what works for you guys? Sit down and kind of go through what's absolutely going to work for you guys where the burden isn't going to be placed solely on you. But I think back to the problem of childcare, the issue still, even if, because what we're talking about is also a lot of privilege where it's like most people, if I'm going to work, I don't have enough to go to work and also invest in meal prep. Like I'm going to work, I'm paying bills, I'm paying childcare, and that is it. And I think that's the problem that the majority of people are facing. And that comes down to childcare. To me, it's an attack on women because it's like this only affects women. It only affects the wife. The man rarely ever gets affected. And so it's like, why is it happening now all of a sudden? Childcare has never been this high ever. It's never been this high in relation to someone's income. So the government to me has to step in and do something about it.
Yeah, it's the same conversation, right? Everything's more expensive now. Homes are more expensive. Lending money is more expensive, or borrowing money, I should say. And I think one of the reasons I love chatting with you is because like you're so full of ideas. And I think a lot of the conversation about dismantling the patriarchy, like there's a lot of conversation out there, but not a lot of ideas. And one of the things that I think is so important for women, like you said, is you have to design the life that's going to work for you. And things like rigid work structure, where you had to be in the office 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, that's not going to be sustainable anymore for the new world we live in. So it's going to take women taking more risks, starting the business, finding a job where you can work from home, doing your own job, starting your own business so that you can create the flexibility and the income. And the other part of that is, as we talk about the solutions, it's women have to earn more. They have to earn more money. And that's what you are here to help them do.
Absolutely. I would love to give you like another piece of advice, but that's really it. It comes down to earning more. And it's not more so like you're chasing a higher check. It's earning more than we're going to budget it. Because it's like, okay, how much do I have to earn in order to meal prep, in order to have childcare on the weekends, in order to, you know, have this flexible lifestyle that I truly want? How much do I have to earn? And then I'm going to be able to manage my money so well that I'm going to be able to sustain this lifestyle. Because there's nothing worse than creating this lifestyle and you can't sustain it because you're not strategic about it. So I think it's earning more and then also budgeting it. You're going to have to budget this multi-million dollar lifestyle that you now want. And I think that's something that women struggle with the most because they don't want to take on that accountability. They don't want that level of discipline that's going to truly be required to live a very wealthy life.
100%. It's the same thing we started at the top of the show is if you want to run your life to the best of its ability, you got to be the CEO of your life. Like you've got to look at the P&L of your life. You got to look at the balance sheet of your life. And one of the things that I want to talk a little bit more about too is building a company to scale or to sell and what that looks like for women and the opportunity that's there. Because I think a lot of people, we've gone through the girl boss era. We saw this whole like upswing and downfall of quote unquote working from home, because a lot of that entrepreneurial energy, that momentum actually wasn't really rooted in building anything that was sustainable, not building anything. Like, people built lifestyle businesses and then they were like, oh my God, I'm working 70 hours a week again. What happened? But you help people build businesses to scale or sell. What does that mean?
So I think that's kind of how everyone has to look at the business. Even if you don't have any desire to sell, you have to build to sell. Because the reality is, especially now, I've been seeing this, especially last year, where so many people want to sell and they can't because they've built a lifestyle business. They built a shit show that's not really valuable. So how you want to frame it is look at your business like an asset, because it is. Just how you would look at a home like an asset. When you want to liquidate, what do you think of? Oh my God, I'm going to sell my home. Same thing with a business. That's how you want to position it. So in order to build it that way, the first thing you have to say, well, what do investors care about? Mm-hmm. Well, they care about profitability and they care about cash flow. That's the most important thing. So like, how much you earn is cool, but how much you're able to keep in the business is what matters most when you're getting ready to sell it. The second thing that you want to focus on is systems and people. So you don't want to build a business that's dependent on you. No one's going to want the business. And it's so messed up having to explain this to people when they're like, well, I do everything. I say, okay, well, we're going to have to sell this business at a discount because no one wants a business where they're going to have to come in and hire a CEO or have to figure this out. It's not valuable at that point. It's not an asset. So it's like if you were to acquire a home and you're like, oh, but you have to get, you know, all new structure for the home because it can't actually run unless I'm in it. They're like, well, I don't want this. I want a home that actually can stand on its own 2 feet without you. And so it's having the systems, the tech stack in place, and also people. So that way, if you're stepping back from the business, it's still running. It's still making money. That part is so crucial. And something else that I don't think a lot of people talk about is diversifying how you get customers. This is another huge selling point. So right now, everyone's like relying on social media or Instagram or TikTok. Typically, it's one platform. Like, I've seen people, like, most of our leads come from Instagram. This is a huge problem when you're getting ready to sell, because oftentimes buyers will say, like, well, what if I can't do the same thing or post the same way that you do? I don't want to, you know, what if things change? Now, 50% of the leads that we had coming through are no longer going to come through. So you really want to diversify also how you're getting customers, because this is a huge selling point, but it makes your business much more valuable.
That's a great tip. I love that. Okay, so we're talking about building businesses to scale or to sell means building without owner dependence, making sure you're profitable, making sure you have systems in place, and making sure that you have diversified marketing streams.
Absolutely. This is how you build a business that's like, okay, it's a lifestyle business. It's great. It's making money versus this is an asset for me. I could actually sell this. Someone would actually want to acquire this. I could actually have a bidding war. It's so hard to find a business that meets all those qualifications that the moment that these buyers find this, it gets snatched up quick. There's bidding wars for this because these businesses, you don't come by them too often. So if you're able to be intentional and build this, this is something that you could sell very, very quickly.
I'm just wanting to underline for our rich girls listening, that's how I start every episode of the show. We are building the trust funds we wish we were born with. Building a business that you can scale and then exit from is the new economy. It is the way to build wealth. I want to know too, Shay, and I'll share mine. When I started my business, like, what did that look like? I know you went from a corporate job to starting your own business. I did the same thing, but I did mine so ass backwards. I did not have a plan. I left my corporate world to take a sabbatical or so, I thought, until my phone rang. And I've bootstrapped my way through my business the whole time so far. And I did that. And it was within the first year of working for myself that I realized that I had made six figures, that glorious six-figure target that everybody is always trying to hit. From my laptop, my brain, and my desk was an ironing board. That's how unglamorous it was. And that's the thing that has propelled me in the momentum to build something that's super valuable and sustainable. What did it look like for you when you started?
Oh my God, I feel like I've made so many mistakes. So when I first started, I was still working in corporate, I would say for like a year and a half. And I literally was just doing consulting and bookkeeping. I had the lowest prices out there and it was so embarrassing. But my thing was like, okay, I just want to understand, how do I go from working a job to actually having clients? So I didn't really care so much about the prices. I already had my full-time job. I did not quit until like a year and a half in, only because I had gotten pregnant. I tried to do everything, be a mom, have this side hustle, and then also like go back to my corporate job. And I remember I came back from maternity leave. I still had my baby at home because it was like COVID and no daycares were open. And I just remember opening a laptop and I was like struggling with postpartum and I just started crying and I called my boss and I said, I just can't do it. Like, I'm just on the phone and I'm not a crier. And I just started crying. She said, I had a baby. I was in your shoes. You need to leave. She was like, and I totally understand. If you ever want to come back at any time, you're more than welcome to. And that's how I quit my job. And I remember calling my husband, like, I just quit because I was like, But luckily I had the support of my husband. So it wasn't like, oh, good luck. I already had clients when I left. So it wasn't like I was just kind of like going into this blind, but it definitely was a struggle because it became less about, okay, I'm just kind of making money just to have a few extra on the side. So I'm like, no, this is like my full-time job. I have to be strategic about this. And so what I did was I always prioritized having reoccurring revenue. Like I really only cared about clients who wanted to stay for the long haul. So like CFO clients, I didn't really care so much for one-off consultations because I'm like, I'm going to be chasing this all the time. So very early on, I always prioritized, you know, reoccurring revenue. And so I would always say like, we kind of grew very steady. It wasn't like a catapult growth. Like we grew every single year, but it's very steady because it's like, my focus really isn't on having the biggest business. It's like, how do I build something that's sustainable? Because when you have two kids, like that is kind of a huge priority where it's like, I'd rather just have monthly reoccurring clients that we really take care of and nurture. And then anything else is kind of just a great bonus.
I'm obsessed. And I just want to, again, I keep saying this, like double click into double underline. Let me highlight. You guys at the top of the call, Shay was like, what is the strength of a feminine run business? It's somebody who nurtures, somebody who has community, who has influence, a strategic mindset. And that's all of the things that you did and you built before you left your corporate job to build something that was sustainable. I'm obsessed.
Yeah. And I didn't even notice that's what I was doing. I'm just like, okay, these are all the people I admire. This is what they're doing. This is how we're going to move forward.
I love it. Well, speaking of community, that's one thing that you're just so tapped into. You're tapped into the business community. You know, so many women in business, so many leaders in business. What are you seeing? What are your predictions, your trends? What's happening in 2025 in business?
Oh my God, I can talk about this all day. So 2024 was the year of AI. Everyone got to see AI in full swing. Everyone's using ChatGPT now. I was telling everyone about this in like 2022, 23. And now we're going to go into this era of advancements where we're no longer just going to use ChatGPT. We're actually going to start having these agents do things for us. They're going to start reading our emails, kind of filtering things out, even probably summarizing and drafting our emails for us. We're going to actually start building AI teams in 2025. That's going to be something that you see more. I would also say there's going to be a lot of media and political manipulation going on. And the reason why you're going to start to see that is because the biggest wealth transfer in the past 12 years is happening as we speak. With crypto, with digital assets, our president just came out with the fucking meme coin. Like all these different things are happening. And oftentimes if you're the type to get distracted with media and the news cycle, you're going to have to take a step back because a lot of those distractions are happening because the boomers are transferring their wealth right now. So when you say, okay, well, where is that going to go? Like, how do I get into this? It's going to be in the technology space. It's obviously going to be in business. So we talked about that too, where you want to build an asset to sell. So many people are selling. I've been on the phone nonstop since probably November because so many people want to sell their businesses. So if you are someone like, you know, I want to grow, I want to scale, I have extra capital to deploy, I would obviously recommend you raise capital and don't use all of your own, but start thinking about that. How do you expand? You don't have to expand by putting money into paid ads. Who can you acquire to be able to get to that point? Because so many businesses are trying to just sell. They have to get rid of it. And we already talked about most of these businesses aren't good. So you're going to be able to get them at a discount because they didn't really put the systems into place. They don't really have technology into place and they just want to liquidate. That's also another way that the West transfer is going to be happening. Another thing is going to be digital assets. We're going to see a huge rise and more NFTs and cryptocurrency and different assets that people kind of laughed at years ago. And people are like, oh, NFTs, the monkey picture. That's actually not what an NFT is. It's really about ownership. And we kind of seen that when they really banned TikTok, how we need a decentralized platform, a decentralized way where it's like the fact that our government can kind of come in and tell us what we can and cannot consume. So we're starting to shift and have more decentralized platforms where it's like, okay, you can't control this. You can't control this news source. You can't control that. We're going to see that start to rise more and more in 2025.
I could talk to you literally all day, but I know you are so busy. You probably have so many women to help today. Let's end it today with our rapid fire rich girl questions. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, girl, tell us your favorite place to vacation.
I'm so basic. I would say before the fires, Malibu. Malibu is like my dream little nook that I love to go to with my husband.
Oh, love that. What is the best investment you've ever made?
In myself, in my brain. I would say my best investment, no joke, would be in 2020 when I invested in Marriott and Tesla. I just remember the market was down during COVID. It was like the announcement where we like, it's a global pandemic. Every stock was in red and I just purchased a shit ton of stocks. And right after that, I purchased a home because we had so much money. So I think that would be my best investment.
Ooh, love that. What is your guilty pleasure?
Champagne.
Oh, same. What's your champagne of choice?
I'm pretty basic. So like the Rosé Veuve Clos.
Oh, so good. It's so funny. We had a bottle of Chandon in the cupboard and I put it in for dinner the other night. And then I saw an article that said champagne sales are down because people don't like to celebrate. I'm like, who's celebrating? I'm just drinking it all the time.
No, I used to do that where it's like, no, let's only celebrate. And then one day my husband comes home with it. He's like, so what? Like, let's just drink it. I'm like, okay.
I love it. What's some advice you'd give to 21-year-old you?
Oh my God, to stay focused and that you are good enough. We talked about that. That's always something I've struggled. I have to have more, I have to do more. And I would just tell myself, you are good enough and you have everything you need right now.
So precious. What about the last one? What in your life makes you feel the wealthiest?
My kids. I get to get up and get my kids ready for school every morning. And we don't rush. It's a very slow pace. I do their hair. We eat breakfast. We talk. And to me, that's the biggest luxury. Because when I worked at corporate, we're hurrying up. We're getting ready. We're getting out of the door to try to beat the traffic on the 805. And that's not part of my reality anymore.
That's so good. And your girls, you know, it's so funny when we're talking at the top of our call of like having to have your kids look so cute and look good. And I'm like, okay, you're the epitome of that. You always look so good. Your girls are actually little baby models. Like, I'm obsessed with them. You just are embodying everything that I admire. And I'm so grateful that you spend time sharing your wisdom with us. Tell the people where they can find you online.
Definitely on Instagram at Center Financial. Join the broadcast channel. I always like sneak and give like little tidbits and even book recommendations. We're finally on YouTube at Shay and Finance because the TikTok ban, I got scared. So more long form content. And then of course on TikTok, Shay and Finance, because there I'm so unhinged. I just say whatever on my mind.
I love it. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Feeling rich? I hope so. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Old Money. If you have questions you want answered, email me at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on social. We are at Old Money Podcast and I am at your service. If this episode spoke to you, inspired you, helped you, if you took a single note, it would mean the world to me if you could please just take a minute to rate and review the podcast. And if you're not doing so already, subscribe. And if you have friends who like getting rich, please share this episode with them, even if it's just on your Instagram story. And I'd love you more than Jeff Bezos loves Amazon Prime. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you on the next episode. Remember, I'm not your lawyer, I'm not your tax professional, and I'm not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners in their personal and professional development and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice. In addition to that, this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services.